are young, we run free, stay up late, we don't sleep, got our friends, got the night.
Welcome back. Weekend kickoff, 1320 WILS, streaming live at 1320WILS.com. Become a fan of the show on Facebook at 1320 WILS Weekend Kickoff, and also follow us on Twitter at WILS Weekend Kick. Got some good guests coming up for you. Ian Rhodes will be with us. WSMV Sports in Nashville will talk with us about the SEC recruiting situation, and also he'll talk to us a little bit about the Big Ten and SEC, how they compared this year, and also he'll talk some Super Bowl with us. 10 o'clock, Josh Helmholt from the Wolverine will be with us to talk about Michigan's recruiting class in football, and then at 10:30, Rico Beard from Fox 2 in Detroit knows all about everything going on in the Metro Detroit area as far as recruiting is going. He'll talk to us about where guys went as far as get high school players from the state of Michigan, and then also talk to us a little bit about Michigan State's recruiting class, where frankly, and we'll get into this in about 10 minutes, I thought Mark D'Antonio has done a pretty darn good job with Michigan State as far as recruiting goes. Anytime you bring in top 30 classes year after year at a place like Michigan State, you're doing something right. So we're going to hit recruiting pretty hard coming up, starting in about 10 minutes. But right now, I want to jump into the junk bin a tiny bit. Some stories that you probably want to know about, but we don't need to spend a ton of time on them. First of all, probably the most important one as far as Michigan State fans are concerned, Corey Lucius, reported in the Detroit Free Press. He tweeted that he is in Iowa, in Ames, Iowa, which is the home of the Iowa State Cyclones. Might know that they actually took Chris Allen away from Michigan State, although he kind of transferred there. I shouldn't say they snagged him. It's not like Iowa State is going and stealing players from Michigan State. But Corey Lucius is in town, and according to Sean Windsor of the Detroit Free Press, it's possible that he could sign with Iowa State a transfer before he leaves Ames, Iowa. And that alludes a little bit to what we were talking about. Michigan State doesn't have a point guard for next year. Corey Lucius was the heir apparent at point guard. So what do you do if you lose Corey Lucius? Now, we know he's dismissed for this year, but Tom Izzo had left the door open either way, whether he wanted to transfer or he wanted to stay. If Corey Lucius leaves, they got no point guard, which means it's got to be Keith Appling next year, which means they've got to shuffle a whole bunch of stuff, and Michigan State will be in a world of hurt. What's interesting about Iowa State, Scott, is Chris Allen starts next year, and he'll have 1 year of eligibility left. If Corey Lucius goes there, he will miss a year and have 1 year of eligibility left. So they'll never actually play together if they both transfer to Iowa State. And I found that kind of interesting. I just think I like what Iowa State's doing. I mean, I think they got two very good players. I think Chris Allen's a good player when you ditch the attitude. And I think Corey Lucius is a good point guard that can definitely serve as a starting point guard at most schools in the country, especially a place like Iowa State. So I think Iowa State's doing well for themselves with cherry picking with Michigan State.
Oh, they have to be thrilled. You get two guys who have 3 years of Big Ten experience, most of that as important roles, if not starting big-time bench minutes. So, I mean, and two guys who have been to a combined four Final Fours, I believe. So, yeah, you definitely, that bolsters. It doesn't matter if they play together. Right now, they're practicing together if they go out there.
Yeah,
they're
and making they'll probably live better together next year or whatever sure case. And you know, he'll be able to warm Lucius up. Now, I should stress, this is not a done deal, okay? This is reported by Sean Windsor of the Detroit Free Press that he may sign up with Iowa State before he leaves Iowa. But he is in Ames, Iowa. Or Amos. Is it Amos or Ames?
Ames.
I thought it was Ames. It's Ames, Iowa, and where Iowa State is, and he very well could sign with them before he leaves.
Shows how irrelevant they'll be and how irrelevant that team is now. We don't even know what the city is called.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
they're in.
I know. Well, I mean, they haven't had a good basketball team in a while. And
since Marcus Fizer.
And Jamal Tinsley and those guys when they lost to Hampton in the first round of the tournament, which is honestly one of the most memorable moments I have of the NCAA tournament, is that 15-2 upset of Iowa State by Hampton. Moving over to the NFL, a couple of stories. I want to start with the Hall of Fame ballots, which the 15 finalists have been named. They'll be notified today if they are going to be in the Hall of Fame or not. And I got to tell you, Scott, I look at this list. I can't tell you one or two even that I don't think deserve to get into the Hall of Fame. Now, the only one that sort of raises questions, just because he was great for a smaller period of time, is Chris Dolman, because he was great with the Vikings, but he also was not fantastic when he moved to the Falcons, when he moved to the Niners. He was sort of more of a role player. But in his prime, Chris Dolman was a fantastic pass rusher for the Minnesota Vikings. But outside of that, do you see any guys that don't deserve to get in?
Well, it's tough when you look at it like that, and I can't remember how we described or how you described baseball, but I look at the Hall of Fame as you need to be way above and beyond everybody else, and it's so hard with the three running backs
yes.
who are in. You've got or trying to get in Marshall Faulk, Jerome Bettis, Curtis Martin.
If I had to choose one of those guys, it's obviously Marshall Faulk, in
yes,
my opinion.
Because he changed the game.
And to a certain extent, Curtis Martin did too. People forget. Curtis Martin was kind of got overshadowed by Marshall Faulk because they played at the same time. But Curtis Martin was that same style of back. Okay, he was 1,400 yards a year on the ground, and then another 700 or 800 yards in the air. Okay, he was a great receiver out of the backfield, as was Marshall Faulk. And so the two of them were kind of pioneers in that style of play. Now, Jerome Bettis is an interesting one because the bus was a fantastic ambassador for the game. Okay, he was a good player, but I'm not sure when I look at him that I I'm not sure he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was the other one I was kind of wondering about with Chris Dolman.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that he was a good running back. I'm not sure if he's a Hall of Fame caliber running back.
See, I actually put him ahead of Curtis Martin.
Okay,
but I take into effect the off the field, the charisma,
yeah,
and knowing Jerome Bettis for the person that he is, and Curtis Martin. I don't know if I've ever seen him do an interview,
no,
if I've ever heard him
quiet.
Talk. I don't know his personality at all. Whereas Jerome Bettis, people become fans of him. You might not have been a Steeler fan,
mm-hmm.
but you probably liked Jerome Bettis, even though...
Without a doubt.
And you might not have been a Notre Dame fan, two teams that have big hatreds towards them, but I think you could still be a fan of Jerome Bettis. A
couple of guys I definitely think will get in. Chris Carter. I don't know how you deny Chris Carter getting in. He's up there in receptions. He's up there in touchdowns. Was a fantastic possession receiver for a decade and a half even. I mean, he was a great player. And then also Tim Brown, between his kick returning and wide receiver play, he's one of the top receivers of all time. I think those two are shoo-ins. Is there anybody on this list that you think is a shoe-in outside of what I've named?
Prime Time.
Oh, I forgot about Dion. And that's another guy you talk about charisma. You know, I mean, and the fact that, you know, Dion Sanders is a guy that he shut down an entire side of the field every single time. People that are our age, okay, that were really towards the tail end of Prime Time, I bet they don't remember that he was more effective than Darrell Revis, as far as I'm concerned, as a cornerback.
Oh, that's tough. Against the run, no way.
No. I'm talking from a pass coverage situation, which is what Dion was. He was a pass coverage guy.
He's definitely has the more of a big play ability, I would say. It's so tough because, I mean, I remember him from the big plays, obviously, from watching him. You see all the highlights. And as to see if he can shut down a guy play after play after play. But I heard him described the best. I think it was Michael Irvin said of him, you don't realize he was out there first down. He was out there second down.
Yep.
He was out there third down, shutting you down. Then he was out there for fourth down, returning the punt. And you didn't want to kick to him most days.
Mm-hmm.
Then he would turn around and play first down as a receiver.
What always amazed me about Deion Sanders was I used to think about baseball, the fact that he played baseball. Okay, and the guy got clocked. What, didn't he get clocked one time in the 4.2s as far as the 40 goes?
He claims to have the fastest 40 on record.
So let's say for argument's sake that he runs like a 4.25 40. Okay, somewhere in that way. Okay, you reduce 10 yards from that. That's stealing a base. Okay, so that means if you run 4 seconds to steal a base, that means that to stop him from stealing a base, and then you add maybe 5 yards extra because of the lead or whatever he might have had, okay, you're talking about having to stop a guy that it took roughly 2.5 to 3 seconds at the most to get from first base to second base.
Yeah, I don't know many guys who can, many catchers, even the best catcher, I mean,
I don't know that you could get him with a pitch
numbers.
Out. I don't know that you could get him with a pitch out.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
So, anyway, Very impressive list of players. I think they all, for the most part, deserve to get in. I think they all eventually will get in. But I think, for the most part, Marshall Faulk, Chris Carter, Tim Brown should definitely get in, and Deion Sanders.
Another guy who people don't really realize, and there's been a huge campaign in the last couple years, Ed Sable. Guy started NFL Films, created that whole thing. And I know it's a name that doesn't pop. You look at it and you kind of look and you, who is Ed Sable exactly? That's the guy who started everything with NFL Films.
Well, and I think you put him in the same sentence as a guy like Ernie, a guy like John Madden, guys like that, who really they were a part of the sport and made it grow despite not being, although John Madden was a coach too, but let's face it, John Madden was known in the NFL for making it big as a broadcaster. One more thing to get to in the junk bin before we take a break. Ndamukong Suh named the Defensive Rookie of the Year. Sam Bradford named the Offensive Rookie of the Year. You got any complaints with either of those?
No, those were the go-to picks for those. What's surprising, I heard it on SportsCenter this morning, and I had to double-check. First time since 1981 that the number one and two picks have won the Rookie of the Year. And I hate stats like that. I had to go back and check because not all the time is it going to be offensive defense. But even with guys in the first five to win those, and that's just...
It shows you how many people flop when they get
to
the NFL.
And that's what's great, to see guys actually come through, not quite earn their money, but...
Well,
closer to it.
I don't think Ndamukong Suh could have gotten 16 sacks and earned his money this year. I mean, that is just a ridiculous salary that he's got. How about some of these other awards? You got Troy Polamalu winning Defensive Player of the Year, Tom Brady Offensive Player of the Year, Bill Belichick Coach of the Year. Any complaints with those? Anybody you would have rather saw in one of those situations?
The only one that I can complain about, the two obvious ones, are the Patriots.
Yeah.
Belichick, best record. You have to go with him. Maybe throw Mike Smith from the Falcons
in that
consideration.
Well, the thing is, with Belichick, unlike Mike Smith, I think he did it with less talent, too. I think that's what made Belichick so good this year. It wasn't the record. It was the fact that he was doing it with guys like Deion Branch, not guys like Randy Moss.
Well, yeah, that's the key, getting rid of Randy Moss and still being that great. And then, I mean, Tom Brady was by far and away the MVP,
without
offensive MVP, give him everything you can. Clay Matthews, I thought, was going to be the Defensive Player of the Year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought he did. You know, I thought about this a lot, and I actually thought about it this morning, too. I like Clay Matthews, but I do think that there's something to the fact that every single week, there are entire schemes set up to avoid Troy Polamalu. And
that's,
I'm not saying that's not the case with Clay Matthews, but I think Troy Polamalu is schemed around more than any other player in the NFL as far as defense goes.
He affects more of the game, more aspects of the game Troy Polamalu is part of, because he can be in coverage. He'll pick off a pass. I mean, he was, what, second in the league, tied for second, I believe, in interceptions, even missed two games. And just the overall impact he has on that defense is very noticeable.
How do you say that name again?
Polamalu.
Oh, there you go. Hey, great. Fantastic. All right, we're going to hit recruiting really hard right after the break. We also got Ian Rhodes from WSMV, Josh Helmholtz from the Wolverine, and Rico Beard. They'll all be here at some point to talk some recruiting. It's coming up next, Weekend Kickoff, 1320 WILS.